love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me wanna go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. It's many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WAFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is Sunday, December the 10th, 2017, and this is the Prairie Monk Show, WEFT's weekly look at the conservation and rails and trails and greenways and whatever is on Dave's mind this week.
Yeah. Let's start with, in passing, we lost Robin Mittenthal this week. He was well known for grew up in Champaign-Urbana, very much an environmentalist. He'd morphed into Indiana for a little while and then to Wisconsin, was involved with a global health institute, and he was advisor to that and sort of did a lot to create that sort of certificate within an institute and at the University of Wisconsin. He's been in charge of or president of a group of 1,500 gardeners in the Madison area while he was there. Had a farm and lost him. He's been working with cranberries and was taking down a tree and it uprooted and fell on him and he lost his life in his early 40s. Wife and two children, but very much respected. He had recently been appointed to Upper Midwest Regional Center for Excellence for Vector-Borne Diseases. That covered five states, and he was the coordinator of that. So he will be missed. He was doing a PhD which involved vectors, but he was, to quote one memorial, Robin was an intelligent, caring, loving advisor to hundreds of students at the Global Health Institute. He cared deeply about education, the environment, the way food systems relate to health. He was a professional, scholar, and a family man with two children. Janet Kalmar has a Sunday night sing at her little house that's on Broadway, almost to the Banner High School, and there will be a memorial there. Part of the sing will be for songs that Robin used to enjoy. His parents are in town, or were in town, and just a nice guy to know. The parents were both tall, and so he was a big man. So we will remember Robin. And if you don't do things, nothing ever happens. And so we're sad about that. I went to a phase two meeting for the Kickapoo Trail. That's since Heartland Pathways initiated that, we keep a very good eye on it. One of the interesting things is that you have to work within the system. This is a trail that is rail banked. The rail banking means that the federal government was worried about losing too many railroad beds. The cost of getting them back in 50 years' time or whenever they want them. They're mainly working on main lines at the moment, but these are a network of lines that they observed were being bought after abandonment by trail people. And so they made a deal to save the bridges, to save the titles. Some titles are reversionary if the railroad leaves out, because the deal was with the railroads that if we let you have a railroad, if the railroad closes, we get the land back. And it provides finance. So the finance for the Kickapoo Trail, 25 miles to Danville, is $12 million plus what the locals have to put in to buy the line and to then satisfy bids at where the lowest bid is $400,000 more than the what was thought would be the cost of installing 7 miles between Urbana and St. Joe. It's just 3 miles, 3 million dollars for that, $3 million plus. So we're looking at it. The interesting thing for me at the moment is the Remnant Prairie on the line. The first phase was so wide it took out all the Remnant Prairie. And that is of concern to us because we're down to next to nothing. And the state was a prairie state. It was two-thirds prairie. So when you go to the second phase, it is between St. Joe and Ogden. That is the portion that is still in Champaign County. But what happens when the interurban came in 1905? It came on the south side of the main line. The road, and usually the roads paralleled the railroad lines because that was convenient. So the road was on the north side of the railroad line. And then the interurban came in 1905 when electricity was found. And it's the main line is about 100 feet wide. The interurban is 37 feet wide. So the interurban from Urbana to St. Joe is on the south side of the railroad line, and the road is on the north side, which means that the interurban territory is adjacent to the farmland. So it tends to be bought or utilized for agriculture on that side. When you get out of St. Joe, there's a huge bridge over Union Pacific Railroad. It's an S-shaped bridge, but it brings the road onto the south side of the interurban. So you transect, if you go from the north to the south, it's the regular railroad line, the interurban, and the road, which means there's not as much invasion from farming on the north side. And the Forest Reserve and Vermilion County Conservation District own on the south side. They own that railroad bed all the way to Kickapoo State Park. That means that there's original soil on the 100 feet, plus there's original soil on the interurban. The Forest Reserve does not own the interurban. It's possibly, I think, owned by Norfolk Southern, but the Ameren has an easement on it. And when there's an easement for power lines, there's always the fear now that the trees under the power line will be herbicided. It used to be that they would be taken out by axe and by chainsaw, which meant that the soil and the prairie underneath remained. But once herbicides have been found, there's a cocktail there that prevents trees from growing for 3 years, and it actually takes out the prairie. So the Forest Preserve has worked with Ameren to ensure that they stay to their 37 feet corridor easement. It was Illinois Traction Company, McKinley and others that early on in about 1905 came in with electricity after it had been utilized for things like interurbans, and that brought electricity to these little towns. This little junction between Union Pacific and the Conrail line is at Glover, and it's a very, very small little burg, but it is key to how bicycles get across that junction. Do you go at grade and be safe? And how can you do that? There's more than one line here because that's where trains are passed. And that has to be a long junction. And perhaps in the future it may have to be three lines to allow a connection with two railroad lines, or to allow passing of trains. Once you get over that corridor, that's when we're interested in the remnant prairie. When you have had the railroad line sitting for 20 years, the trees have begun to grow, but underneath there, there's a prairie, and it comes back. It comes back very slowly. It might take 10 or 15 years to come back, and it may not come back totally. But one of our discussions was there's a temptation to put seed into that ratty prairie and augment it. But what that does is it takes it away from being a remnant prairie. And why we need the remnant prairie is we need to be able to guess at what was a native when early settlers came here. Our railroad beds are very narrow and long and skinny, and they're not typical of a million acres of prairie. But the remnants are there, so that's one of the things I was interested to make sure that that area is not augmented by modern seed. It's a good idea, but it's not going to help us save the original that we need to be able to guess from to know what a native prairie was in this particular burg. It's not very good, but it's all we have left. Every inch of soil is valuable for farming or development or whatever. So I found that very helpful to go. There's an interim Forest Preserve Director at the moment, and she is very knowledgeable of this corridor. And Dabbs is the biologist who will work with this territory, and he's been making sure that the area does not get herbicided. Even if you have herbiciders working on an interurban line and power lines, there's this. The possibility that we will be able to do some interesting things, not only there, but along the corridor in Vermilion County is the same sort of situation where the railroad line is to the north, the interurban is in the middle, and the road is to the south, which means we at least have the original soils and some of the original plants. There will be mowing, and there'll be mowing as you go through urban situations. There'll be mowing when there's a house on the north side of the line. But even mown territories can come back if you are patient. It will be weedy. There'll be invasive trees like olives. But patience and working with that would be very helpful. So I was pleased with that meeting, and I was glad it was being held, because there's a tendency sometimes for engineering projects to be a fait accompli. And so we need to know how to communicate with Farnsworth, which is the contracting planners and supervisors of the trail. There'll be a contract, and be similar to what was for the first phase, and probably the cost will be about the same, about $3 million. We hope that we can make it narrow. The traffic from St. Joe to Sydney is likely to be greater than the traffic between St. Joe and Ogden, so it could be legitimate to have a narrower trail. All the way to Oakwood. Doris Westphal, who is a prairie person, Audubon person, did a lot of picking of seed, prairie seed, along this corridor, and she created a very decent and well-announced regrowth prairie for the Vermilion County Conservation District. But the seed came from these remnants. So we're very jealous of them, and we want them to stay. And I think some of you out there should be driving that corridor just to see what goes on and how you can help to preserve the biology. The pictures we have of the first phase dramatic. The loss of the seed is tremendous, and there are people who understand this completely, because they used to pick seed at that location too, and we do that ourselves. I went to the market on the square as a vendor, and that's pretty tremendous. I've gone several times already this year, and I spread out a big map of heartland pathways. We figure that that the Kickapoo Trail is spoken for. It's not going to go away. It's on its own. Now is the time to go back to the 33 miles in the Monticello area that we acquired before there was a Rail Banking Act. So we don't have the advantage of that finance, that protection of the bridges, although we did get to save three truss bridges and 27 trestles. We lost one bridge. But that area needs attention. It needs to be preserved so we don't have invasion from side to side or invasion across the bed. We have been very, very lucky. Most of the farmers along the line that are adjacent have been very, very respectful of what we're trying to do. They realize that this is a genetic. We're looking at the preservation of the prairie and the prairie soils. It's gotten to the point where we don't have any real soils left anymore. If you really need an original soil, you have to find a little old church that you could crawl underneath and get a soil sample. So the bacteria and the fungi and all the wonderful things that are going on in the soil are still there on the railroad bed. And there's a little bit of creosote, a little bit of organization down the railroad line. But if you were putting in a railroad line, you had a crane and you had rails and you put down stick rail and you tied it down with the ties and things, and then you moved your crane forward a bit and then you put down another 30 feet. And so the rail bed was put down in a linear fashion, so the area on either side is still very very nice to have. And we have that in Heartland Pathways. We also have the opportunity to re-rail if necessary, and we've been beginning to do that at the White Heath Inn of 4 miles of Heartland Pathways territory. So, once again, the railroad doesn't need more than about 25 feet to create a railroad. So the other 75 feet is available for prairie preservation. That's provided we don't have an adjacent interurban that's herbicided, and it's herbicided in wind that's over 15 mile an hour, and it drifts, and it also means that we have to watch the herbicide, because if you have a glyphosate, then the plants are getting resistant to glyphosates or Roundup. So then we look for other herbicides, and they're pretty scungy. And they blow. So we're looking at trying to control that herbicide situation. When you have a glyphosate, you do retain the grasses because it's specific for broadleaves. And so in some cases, we've taken a prairie that we bought for a prairie and it's been converted to a grass prairie because the broadleaves, which we cherish, have been subject to Roundup. So we're back at the Heartland Pathways territory. So when I went to survey the city market on the square, mainly talking to people, I took a few T-shirts that say, grow it, don't mow it. We're not totally anti-mowing. We're realize that plants come to head at different times of the year. What we want is mowing of invasive species, farm species, even prairie species that take over. We need to manage them at the right time of the year for railroad side mowing to occur at a very specific time on August the 1st or whatever, takes out most of the prairie that's not even flowered yet. So we need management. We need mowing to make a statement. So we have a mowers ourselves, but we don't have 15-foot bush hogs. We have more a narrow mower that can mow 5 feet on the edge of the roadside, and then the rest can come back to its original prairie. We have a good prairie between Monticello and Cisco. It goes past Allerton Park Farms, and we have found eastern Massasauga rattlers there, and they're an endangered species. So for biologists, that's very pleasing. For people who have to do construction work on culverts and things that take the water off the land there and run it into the Sangamon, it's an anathema because they don't want to encounter a rattlesnake. And so we don't say too much about rattlesnakes, but they're friends and relatives, and they're also in other parts of Allerton Park. That prairie, we're looking at Heartland Pathways as a huge gestalt. It's 33 miles in three sections. We have a covenant for railroading to come back. This predated the Rail Banking Act, but it had the same principle involved. And so that is sometimes a challenge for the biologists, because the prairie has now moved over onto the railroad right away, the ballast. And it's kind of interesting because the drier species are on the ballast where there's gravel and the ballast is higher, so it's well drained. So you're having an interesting species dynamics there, which you would like to save. So you have questions about whether you put in a trail. Do you have a walking trail so people can see the prairie? Do you have a 4 foot wide prairie trail? Or do you have a 10 or 12 or 14 foot trail, which is enough for recreational trend, passing of bicycles and hikers and whatnot? I think I very much am not in favor of having a trail like that. I could handle a 4 foot trail. In some cases, when people put a trail through a natural area, they're making it a 2 foot trail so that you don't disturb the natural area that you're going through. And then they make the trail a one way trail so that you don't have to pass any other. So outside of Monticello, the first 2 miles is a wonderful trail that the Monticello City has worked with Parkland Pathways to put in a concrete trail that's carpentered so that you have a bridge on top of a trestle and a bridge on top of a bridge going over the truss bridge that goes over the Sangamon. And it's wonderfully done, and it's very, very popular. It takes people from old Monticello across the river to new Monticello's subdivisions on the west. So we're pleased with that. The reason why it's concrete is that you can work on it yourself. If there's a tree on the side and it lifts up a piece of concrete, then the city can go in itself and replace the concrete. And you don't have to call up a contractor to put down asphalt. Asphalt's a little bit more kinder on the knees and the head if you fall off a bicycle. But so in this case, we have a concrete trail. The second part of it was by popular demand. It goes round to Applewood. It's still running opposite or adjacent to subdevelopments. It's still chip limestone, and there are plants that grow in the corridor. It's the chip limestone has been, or crushed limestone has been put down with a vibrating roller that is very heavy, so that it's a fairly firm surface. So you cannot ride a skinny tired road bicycle on it, but you can you almost can. You can certainly have an all terrain type bicycle, a mountain bicycle that can go on it. Well, it tends to grow a few weeds because this is natural territory. And so I got a friendly call from the physical plant director for Monticello, and he was wanting to ask what sort of herbicide would he use to get rid of those weeds that people have to walk around. And my answer was that, well, we don't really want to do that, any herbicide at all. We cherish the bacteria and the fungi in the soil and the plants might grow on either side. And this was understood, and I think that what they will probably do is mow that vegetation rather than herbicide it. And so the question of what sort of herbicide doesn't come up. In the long run, that corridor also will be concreted, but it depends on getting enough money to do that, and that's a debate at the city council level at the moment. We have ownership of the corridor, but there's an easement, and it's a narrower easement than we have on a Kickabit Trail. Past Applewood, which is the end of this 2 mile of rather wonderful trail, which is a demonstration to other people as the value of a trail. Past that, there's 4 miles of rather nice prairie. It's been overgrown some by autumn olives, but we try to take those out, and I explained to the physical plant director that we do use herbicides ourselves. We chainsaw the invasive weed trees, which is basically autumn olive, and we put a herbicide on the stump so that we're not blanket spraying. We're trying to control that weed tree, which is tremendously invasive. But underneath there's the prairie. And I have a little booklet that I produced in 1902, and it was like 1 hour on the prairie, just to show people what a prairie is like, because people haven't seen it and they don't know it, and it's flowers are smaller and their flowering period is shorter than the cultivated plants that you might have in the garden. The pollinators are sometimes different too. There's bees and insects that are often extremely small, but they're part of keeping this sort of vegetation afloat. And there is a worldwide concern about the loss of these creatures. So we're very pleased with what we have. There are some nice prairie plants there. There's a purple gentian, there's a hoary puccoon. These are indications of a good prairie. And at Wildcat Creek, both sides of Wildcat Creek are very nice, except for the fact that they took a culvert out. And where did they put all the junk that came from the culvert? Right on top of the prairie. Even though we had gone out to the contractors and the administrators of the road improvement to see that they did not do that. And when we dig down 4 feet under the under the crap that was put there, the original plants like lead plant and purple cornflower and the like are still there. There has been a little bit of research there, and it's thought that some of these plants have three sets of chromosomes, so they're somewhat different from normal. And it's so sad to see this covered up. The contractors were more concerned about the fact that they might encounter a rattlesnake. So they went to the Natural History Survey to find out what they had to be careful about, and certainly Phillips, the person who is a herpetologist there, was able to explain to them that this was an endangered species. So that corridor is one that could perhaps be spun off. If we look at our whole gestalt, that could be spun off as a group. But I'm thinking that might be something that the Grand Prairie Friends might take over and look at as a prairie. And we don't think that a railroad will ever come back in. And if it does, it will have difficulties because by this time, the trail across the river has gotten to be rather popular. There is a shady rest, which is 30 acres of what was going to be a small village on top of what was before that a picnic ground. So it was about 15 miles from Champaign and then a little further from Decatur. So you could go there with your horse and cart. And that's about as far as you could expect a horse to take you. But this little park has some bottom land that's adjacent to the Sangamon River. It has a truss bridge. It has a moraine, the Cerro Gordo moraine, so you've got some hilly part of it. And Heartland Pathways goes right through the middle of it. And in the future, we might like to reconstruct a Chautauqua, where people would have a picnic and the railroad would bring your clients to the picnic ground, perhaps at an excursion level with 5 cents a trip to as long as you were going to the picnic ground. And so that's of interest, and we can dream, but it's also a piece that got spun off, and it's in the Piatt County Forest Reserve, and it's there in perpetuity, and the Forest Reserve also is in a position to have a tax base and the ability to go out for a grant. So they put in interesting trails, and this 30 acres is loaded with spring herbs, and it's just a wonderful site to be. So what else can we look at? Well, this railroad bed abandoned, and there was a railroad museum on the interurban adjacent. And they didn't really realize that this abandonment would occur, but very quickly when the abandonment did occur, the railroad museum bought 7 miles of line with the rails intact so that they could run historic trains. So they switched over their activities from the interurban railbed, which they had re-railed, to the line that ran between Champaign and Decatur. And that's where they run their historic trains at the moment. They use basically 3 miles, they do have 7 miles, and we own territory on a Y. A Y is where a train can turn around. And so the railroad museum has 2 Ys, one in Monticello and one on Cisco at White Heath. And that Y will allow them to take a small passenger train and turn it around so that the engine runs in front, which is It's kind of nice if you're a railroad buff to see the engine in front. Otherwise, if you don't have that sort of turnaround, you push the train back so the engine is at one end only. Or you can have a switch line and put the engine on front, which is more appropriate for your visitors. We've created with Tom Scott and railroad engineers that work a lot with the Railroad Museum. We've formed a historic Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad. It's historic with the attempt to get a historic Railroad Museum trains into Champaign. So there's another possible spin-off, and that's happening. Railroad ties are being put in, and stick rail is being acquired that would allow that to happen. So once again, we're looking at a huge gestalt and looking at pieces that we can take and work with. There are other potentials. There's 5 miles of rail bed between Weldon Springs State Park and Clinton Lake. And that 5 miles could join those two state parks that are quite popular with a trail. And the trail goes down across the Salt Creek and then up over a Hensley Moraine, and it has terrain that Champaign County doesn't have. And it's rather wonderful, and we hope that will go into action. It might not go quickly because this is a complex that is huge. It requires state and federal funding. It requires a lot of local activity to the sense that we don't want the corridor to be invaded, and it has been invaded in one place, and that's costly. We've already created a bill of $12,000 just to survey a quarter of a mile invasion to make sure that we have all the information ready and the title details ready to take that to court if necessary. We would prefer not to do that, but not everyone believes in what we do. So part of the reason for my being at the market on the square is to talk to people and to have them look at this sort of thing, to have them look at the contiguity between Danville and Decatur. How do you go through Champaign? How do you go through Monticello? Can you put bicycles on a road that has been replaced with the Highway 72 and do a shared road? So this has been heavy on our minds this week, and so there's emphasis on Heartland Pathways. We initiated the Kickapoo Trail. It's into action. It's going. So, and quite a bit of the funding that has come to that has come through our annals for people who would normally contribute to Heartland Pathways have been contributing to the Kickapoo Trail and have very pleased to do so. The lowest bid was 400,000 lower than higher than than what was expected. So you could have waited to debate that, but I think the general feeling was, let's do it because it's been sitting here for 20 years and it's time it was done and it's happening. So we'll keep our eye on it, but I think the emphasis now should be on Heartland Pathways, with a very good demonstration of a trail already intact at Monticello, and with the help of the the experience at the Kickapoo Trail. And so we're talking to people who might take this sort of thing on into different generations. And some of these dreams might take 200 years to put into action. And you have to think about the railroads, what they might want to do, and how they might change. At the moment, they're interested in mainline corridors so that they have two tracks from Chicago to Los Angeles. You have to think about heavier rail, welded rail. So there's a concern about the main lines. They're putting a ring rail around Chicago, and they're already having problems with people who don't exactly want a ring railroad around Chicago. But it would obviate taking a train from Michigan around to Wisconsin and not having to go into downtown Chicago and back out. So already the railroaders have reduced the time between Chicago and Virginia by 2.5 hours. They've also taken tunnels and raised them so that they can run with trains that take shipping containers that are higher, and these are on trains that don't get shoved around in yards. There's one train that you load containers onto with a gantry crane, and that's a different technology, and so the railroaders are working at that. The trail corridors that are saving railroad space are likely to have their space for a long, long time. There are now over 20,000 miles of these trails in the country. Very few. The Kickapoo Trail is the first one in east central Illinois that's of any length. And so that's partially because the land on either side is so valuable. It's a desire to have one more little plot of corn and soybeans. But guess what? The price of corn and soybeans is down because there's an overproduction locally. So do we really need to take out a genetic material because we want a little more income, which is really less income, because the more we produce, the less the price. It depends a little bit on what Brazil does, or Argentina, or other places around the world. And so there's this constant economic battle. But and it extends into bears, those parts of those forests and open spaces and land utilization in Utah that the president has just reduced in volume. I think Theodore Roosevelt would be turning over in his grave for what is happening at the present time. So we have to be doing some of these things locally. So you're not going to have a lot of money from the locals or from the state or the Fed. So you have to look at little pieces that will keep this corridor afloat and make sure that people know why it's there and how it's there. So that's why I'm standing around in the market on the square. We sell a few T-shirts and we sell some prints and cards, but basically talking to people. We prepared a little booklet. It's 1 hour in Prairie. That was there for give out. I talked to people, and I found out where they lived. And one person said she had just bought part of the family farm on Route 47. And I said, you must be near the Hazen Bridge. She says, I am a Hazen. And so CCDC bought this retired bridge. And so who looks after it? How does it get? Just that little conversation is one. Other people are wanting to put in plots of prairie in their gardens. Others want to do pollinators. And a pollinator prairie is different from a regular prairie. The pollinator people will be prepared to put in cultivated plants like sweet clover. So we talk about that. Somebody wouldn't want to buy a T-shirt for their father that's in Ohio, where there's prairie, and he has a prairie. And that's getting to the limit of the prairie to the east. I took for fun a Tribune article that was written about some of the work we do in 1985, and it's kind of interesting that we were using purple coneflowers with 4-foot roots to try and stop erosion on a ditch at Lake Park. So these things are what we discuss. I'm looking at the time.
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Well, we can Australia
to
next week.
Well, I was thinking that it might be fun to talk about Australia at Christmas time, but David said a comment on volcanoes. He was looking at a website that was showing Kilauea, I think it is, a Hawaiian volcano, where the lava was a river flow. And you might want to say something.
You've put me on the spot. Do you remember the context? There was some volcano where they actually seemed to have found living things that can survive in, but that's probably not what you're talking about here. If I'd known up front you were going to ask me about this, I would have found the website again. Was this last week? I'm sorry.
Yes.
This is going to go nowhere here.
I'm just reading your stuff. But let me tell you something about
I'm
it.
I'm at a loss.
I've climbed up on the volcano area at Hilo. And just to look down and see this molten material. And when it erupts, it's like a rolling land. You can see the highway that you're on is being covered by this progression of molten lava. And it's very high in silica. So people will come out of there. As you're going up, people will say, you'll wear your shoes out. Mm-hmm. But you will be amazed at what. So keep going. You have to keep going. The sulfur fumes, and you can't breathe too many of those. And you can't get too near this heat. Some of this molten lava goes out into the ocean and causes steam. And this is how some of these islands have been formed. And you have to know that even deeper in the rifts on way deep in the oceans, some of these outlets of volcanic material are going on there too. And this has an influence on things like tsunamis. If you have a explosion, as Bali in Indonesia is having a problem at the moment because one of their volcanoes is active and it has shoved out enough soot and ash that the airlines have been closed. But you're forming new soils, and perhaps when this cools down, you'll have agriculture that you didn't have before because you got rich soils. But you have to wait around and you have to evacuate all the people that have settled on that volcanic cone. And that's not easy. So it's in Indonesia, and that's going on at the present time. But to be close enough to a volcano to observe it and know its ropiness and to know that you might be standing on a piece of cooled volcanic material, but there's a space underneath it, and there's rivers, so you have a hollow tunnel that you could walk through once things have cooled, and you have areas where the lava will sort of form a lake, flatland. So that was interesting to me.
There are certainly plenty of places you can go to where you can climb up what was a volcano, but is long since dormant and dead, and it's no longer. But for example, I spent 10 days in the Caribbean, and all of the islands down there, I believe, are formed by volcanoes. Yeah. And the island that I was on is St. Christopher. And one day I spent several hours on a guided walking hike up the side of the volcanic, you know, the peak of the volcano. Yeah. And you could actually watch, apparently, as clouds were forming, there was something about the shape of it would actually gather moisture, and when the moisture would reach a certain intensity, it would just kind of float away, and you'd actually get some local clouds that way. Very neat. And there are certainly plenty of places in America. Devil's Tower is a volcano where the lava cooled inside the volcano, and eventually weather wore away, as I understand it, the outside of the volcano. Yes. And what you see is a tower of the cooled lava inside it. And it's very, very, very spooky looking. It's why it was featured in Close Encounters of a Third Kind, a movie. But yeah, you can walk right up to it. People will rappel up and down the Devil's Tower and things like that. So yeah, there are plenty of places in America where you can see, certainly even in the continental, you can see past volcanoes. I don't know if we have any active volcanoes on the continental U.S.
Well, you do. You're not a
continental. Yeah, you go to Hawaii, right?
Mount Rainier is fairly active.
Is it?
And that can get you. These are even the researchers for this field cannot predict what's going to happen. It's got better than it used to be, but it's hard.
Your alarm says it must be about noon here. We've got about a minute.
So, yes. So have a good season here. Come to the fair. We'll be there again, and we'll talk to you about your particular interest in prairie and pollinators and whatever. And the more people know, the better. So discussing this sort of thing is rather helpful. And so for now, say this is wish you a good season here. The next few weeks will be busy. And this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. I'll put in a quick plug also that, don't forget, this is the day two of Emma Song's concert this year. It's this semester. It's called Taking Wing. It's all songs having to do with flying birds and things like that. Dave, you had a thought?
Yes, I wanted to announce that The Champaign Park District will be having a meeting at 12:15 at the Farm Bureau meeting, and they'll be discussing Heritage Park. And I meant to say something about that because it's a prairie, and it requires you to think some beautiful thoughts about that, and to listen to the planners and get their ideas of what they might think to do and how you can put in. It's very helpful.
All right. And that's, and I'll go back to Amazon. There is an admission charge, but it's a sliding scale. No one is turned away, so if you can't afford to pay anything, come on in. And it is at the McKinley Presbyterian Church, which is at 5th and John Street on the U of I campus. And what day is your meeting that you're talking about, Dave?
Wednesday. Wednesday at noon.
At noon. There you go.
12:15.
So one of them
at the Farm Bureau meeting on Country Fair Drive.
So there you go. That's something coming up on Wednesday, and Emma Song is this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And it is now noon, time for Shruti Music of India here on WEFT Champagne.